from Vermont Public. This is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Tuesday, January 21st, and here are today's headlines. The State Department for Children and Families illegally conspired with private service providers to surveil a pregnant woman, attempt to coerce her into a cesarean, and wrongfully take custody of her child. That's alleged in a lawsuit filed by the ACLU of Vermont last week. The 30-page complaint was filed on behalf of a single plaintiff, named only A.V. in the suit. But ACLU senior staff attorney Harrison Stark does not think their plaintiff's experience is unique.
I think what's really extraordinary about this case is that it is an extremely alarming set of facts as to one individual, but it is also indicative of a larger systemic problem.
The ACLU alleges DCF maintains a, quote, high-risk pregnancy docket of pregnant Vermonters deemed unsuitable for parenthood. Those pregnant individuals are monitored using confidential information illegally obtained from medical providers and social service organizations, that according to the ACLU. DCF Commissioner Chris Winter says the department is reviewing the case and declined to comment. In a much different story related to pregnancy, Vermont is moving toward qualifying doulas for Medicaid coverage. Right now, people have to pay for doulas out of pocket. Marty Collins runs a volunteer program at UVM Medical Center, which allows patients who can't afford doulas to benefit from the service.
In the rest of the world of medical care, if it were a medicine or a pill, you know, it would be definitely recommended and prescribed regularly. So this is something that's really needed.
The State Office of Professional Regulation this week recommended that Vermont set up a certification program for doulas as a step toward Medicaid coverage. The profession currently is not regulated in Vermont. The University of Vermont got nearly $24 million in federal funding last week to invest in semiconductor research and education, specifically in creating semiconductors from a relatively new material called gallium nitride. It works really well in electronics that need a lot of power, like electric cars or airplanes. And it's intended to replace silicon, which had been the standard in semiconductors for decades, says Doug Merrill. He's in charge of the new project called the Vermont Gallium Nitride Tech Hub.
Where gallium nitride is advantageous is that it conducts electricity about 10 times better than silicon. And it allows you to turn it on and off about 10 times better as well. Its electrons have higher mobility, so they can just go back and forth much, much faster than they can in silicon.
The university is partnering with Global Foundries, a big semiconductor company with a factory in Vermont, but the plan is to make the technology available to other businesses, researchers, and students as well. The head of Vermont's largest insurance company says healthcare spending is out of control. In a letter to lawmakers and business leaders, the president of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Vermont said the company has lost millions of dollars in recent years, including over $13 million in October alone. He said Vermont's commercial health care premiums are the highest in the country, but they're not covering the cost of care. Owen Foster is with the Green Mountain Care Board, the state's health care regulator. He says Vermont's old rural population is only partially to blame for the increasingly unaffordable premiums.
The demographics does not explain away the problem, and I think it's a little bit of an excuse to not actually address what we have going on.
Prices at Vermont hospitals, especially for outpatient care, are among the highest in the country. And coming up, President Donald Trump's return to office has prompted schools across the nation, including in Vermont, to review their practices around student privacy and immigration. Vermont Public's Lola Dufour has more on what they're doing to protect students without legal status. And because we were off for Martin Luther King Jr. Day yesterday, we have a second piece for you today. Elodie Reed has details about how Vermont's dairy farm workers could be impacted if the new Trump administration follows through on a promise to conduct mass deportations. Those stories are next, after this. Schools nationwide are preparing for what the second Trump administration could mean for students without legal status. Vermont Public's Lola Dufour joined host Mary Engish to tell us about what schools here are doing in case Immigration and Customs Enforcement comes knocking.
Lola, why are schools concerned about immigration right now?
Well, Trump is returning to power and has, in a lot of ways, promised to really take the gloves off when it comes to immigration. A really key example of this, which relates directly to schools, is this long-standing policy that Immigration and Customs Enforcement has to not conduct arrests at places like schools, hospitals, and churches. Trump is reportedly planning to rescind that policy this time.
And how many children without legal status that are here in Vermont right now would this impact?
We don't know that number for Vermont. Nationally, estimates peg the number at around 650,000. I mean, that's how many people are in Vermont. That's kids in schools who don't have legal status. But we do know that there are students in Vermont schools today who don't have legal authorization to be in the U.S. The migrant community has long been the backbone of the dairy industry, and migrant laborers are increasingly leaned upon in the construction industry, which is strapped for workers and also all important nowadays. And some advocates say that the fact that this population is smaller and perhaps more hidden in Vermont than it is in other states where that population is comparatively larger also means that people are more unaware of how immigration enforcement works and, you know, what their rights might be.
Well, I'm certain that school districts have been thinking about this for a while. Can you share with us what school districts are doing about it?
Well, Winooski is being the most aggressive so far. It's considering passing a so-called sanctuary school policy, which would limit the district's ability to share student and family information, restrict ICE's ability to come on campus without a judicial warrant, and help connect families to community resources. That district is the most racially diverse in the state. It's home to a large refugee community. And its superintendent said he wants to send as strong a signal as possible to a very nervous population that the district is here for them. Other districts appear to be acting a little bit more quietly, mostly by reaching out behind the scenes to review best practices with experts and advocates.
How much actually can individual schools do?
Good question. So federal law supersedes anything a school board can pass, right? But advocates are still pushing these policies, which they say can meaningfully help. For one, they want staff to be trained in case ICE actually does show up to school. They think it's important the school have protocols in place so that educators aren't making judgment calls in the heat of the moment. And while federal immigration law trumps school policies, so do federal privacy laws. And advocates think that having clear rules and policies in place around information sharing will minimize the risk that, A, an educator divulges information that helps a kid or their parents get deported when they weren't actually required to share that information, and, B, that that same educator inadvertently breaks privacy laws in doing that. But, you know, there are also concerns, including in Winooski, about the costs of taking a big public stance. Trump has retaliated in the past against so-called sanctuary communities, and his, border czar has pledged to do so again.
Lola, that's what some individual schools are doing. Is the state getting involved?
Not directly, but the Agency of Education says it's going to be sending out some guidance. A spokesperson shared parts of it with me, and based on what she included, it sounds like it's going to reflect a lot of what's already getting passed around, a lot of Know Your Rights stuff that we're seeing from the advocacy space.
That's Lola DeFore, Vermont Public's education reporter. Thanks so much.
You bet, Mary.
That was host Mary Engish. And it's not just schools that are keeping an eye on what the new Trump administration might mean for people in Vermont. Among Donald Trump's promises after returning to office is a mass deportation campaign. And one sector this could impact is the dairy industry. Across the U.S., farms rely on immigrant workers who might not have a path to legal status. In Vermont, many farmers don't seem immediately concerned about losing their workforce. But farm worker organizers say they're worried about increased immigration enforcement worsening poor conditions on farms. Vermont Public's Elodie Reed reports.
Lupita lives in a house among a quilt of rolling farm fields. On a recent weekday, she fried plantains and heated up the Mexican drink atole for her kids and some visitors, a cozy treat for a chilly day.
¿Quieres plátano?
We're only identifying Lupita by her middle name. She's concerned about retaliation from the Trump administration, including detention and deportation due to her legal status. She's part of the community of between 1,000 and 1,500 Latino immigrants currently in Vermont to work on farms, or to be with family members working on farms, mostly in the dairy industry. Lupita says she and her father left their home in Tabasco, Mexico, because they could no longer grow watermelons due to pollution. It was winter when they arrived in Addison County, one of the two biggest dairy counties in Vermont. Lupita was 16 and remembers the cold. She tears up while describing how hard it was to be away from her family.
Eran momentos muy difíciles porque yo extrañaba mucho a mi mamá y a mis hermanos. Era como, no sé, era muy joven, no hablaba el idioma, y siempre me sentía muy sola.
Now at 30 years old, Lupita says that Vermont reminds her a lot of Tabasco. It's small, rural, and beautiful. And it's grown to feel like home.
Yo siento que me enamoré mucho de Vermont.
For decades, Vermont dairy farmers have hired immigrant workers due to a shortage in local labor. Despite this practice being widespread, there is currently no path to legal status available to these immigrant workers. The H-2A visa, for example, is seasonal, and dairy cows must be milked every day, year-round. The dairy lobbying group National Milk Producers Federation says it wants Congress to provide permanent legal status to current dairy workers and their families, as well as a viable guest worker program. In the meantime, the industry has had to contend with immigration enforcement.
What do blue lights mean? It means pull over and stop.
The federal arrest of two Vermont dairy farm workers, originally from
Migrant
Mexico.
Justice organizer Brendan O'Neill says undocumented dairy workers are fully aware of the serious risks they face.
This has a real significant potential harm to Vermont farms.
What Trump's immigration enforcement might look like remains vague. An official from Trump's transition team declined to answer questions about immigrant farm workers specifically and instead sent a statement reading in part, quote, President Trump will enlist every federal power and coordinate with state authorities to institute the largest deportation operation of illegal criminals, drug dealers, and human traffickers in American history, while simultaneously lowering costs for families and strengthening our workforce, end quote.
So is he really going to sweep into some dairy operation and seize all their workers and make those farmers angry at him?
This is retired Vermont dairy farmer John Roberts.
I'm an optimist. I just don't see that happening.
And Roberts isn't alone.
So I think for most farmers, they're like, well, that's just unimaginable.
Dan Baker is a professor emeritus at the University of Vermont who has studied dairy labor for a couple decades.
For certain farms, you know, when the farmer is injured, for example, or you don't have workers, that farm can go out of business very, very quickly.
Baker says farmers don't want to become a target by speaking up because they're stressed out enough as it is. Nearly a third of Vermont's dairies have stopped shipping milk in the last 4 years. Roberts was the only farmer, current or former, willing to go on the record for this story. State agriculture officials also declined to be interviewed. Before he sold his herd of registered brown Swiss cows in 2012, Roberts ran a dairy in Cornwall for 40 years. And in the final years of operation, he says he hired some workers from Mexico who were great tax-paying employees.
And we hired them through an agency with the assumption that the agency vetted their legality. I will say no more than that.
As someone who immigrated to the U.S. from Great Britain, Robert says while he agrees that border security needs to improve, so do this country's pathways to legal status.
Get them on the avenue to at least green cards or some kind of visa or ultimately citizenship.
Many farmworker advocacy organizations are opposed to policies like guest worker programs, which would guarantee dairy farmers a labor force without providing citizenship. Teresa Maris shares that view.
The immigration system is pretty violent against immigrant workers.
She's an associate professor of anthropology at UVM, where she studies immigration and the food system. She also sits on the board of the local immigrant farmworker advocacy organization Migrant Justice. And Maris says while the U.S. food system relies on immigrant labor, it also has a long history of exploiting workers and then criminalizing them.
Whether we're looking at internment, whether we're looking at, the selective importation of workers under the Bracero program and then the refusal to let them stay.
Maris says the threat of mass deportations follows this pattern. And what she says should happen instead is for the food system to give workers more of a say. For Lupita, who we met at the beginning of this story, it's a matter of ensuring immigrant dairy farm workers' human rights because they face long-standing issues with living and working conditions, including women workers regularly reporting sexual harassment. And one of Lupita's biggest worries is that because of Trump's threats of detention and deportation, immigrant farm workers will be afraid to speak up about mistreatment.
Porque a veces la gente, por el miedo a sus estatus migratorio, aceptan cualquier trato de los patrones o cualquier abuso.
A mí me gusta.
What Lupita plans to do after Trump takes office is what she's done for many years, continue organizing with Migrant Justice. Among their victories, a housing and labor rights program called Milk with Dignity, access to driver's licenses, and state policy aiming to reduce collaboration between local police and immigration authorities. Lupita says farm workers raising their voices against injustice is how to move forward.
El mundo no se va a detener porque Trump sea presidente. Como yo sigo organizando, mis compañeros tienen ganas de organizarse. Como tenemos que seguir haciendo esto.
For Vermont Public, I'm Elodie Reed.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Lola Dufour, Howard Weiss-Tisman, and Lexi Krupp. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelyan, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you tomorrow.
Every episode of Brave Little State begins with a question about Vermont that's been submitted and voted on by listeners like you. What happened to all the restaurant workers? What's the deal with Vermont's fire towers? Why do people like the band Phish? Follow Brave Little State wherever you get podcasts. From Vermont Public, part of the NPR network.